Hey, I have a secret.
Uh-huh.
I use Secret Whole Body Deodorant because more than just my armpits stink.
Oh, can I use it where my bra rubs under my...
Oh, yeah.
And what about down there? You know, my...
Totally. 4 out of 5 gynecologists would recommend it. So I tried it, and now I get 72 hours of freshness. From my pits to my...
Ooh, I love that it's a spray.
Me too. And it comes in sticks and creams too. Go get your Secret Whole Body Deodorant.
The Boston Marathon, presented by Bank of America, has thousands of runners running for thousands of reasons.
I'm running to raise money for Achilles International so amputee athletes can keep running too.
For every mother counts, because all women deserve access to quality maternity care.
For St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and every kid with cancer who just wants to be a kid again.
Join Bank of America in supporting this year's runners. Give if you can at bofa.com/helpacause. References to charitable organizations is not endorsement by Bank of America Corporation. Copyright 2024.
With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot, you can get up to $2,300 off select kitchen packages from top brands like GE Profile. That means you can save on a new GE Profile smart quad door refrigerator that's full of convenient features like a dual dispense autofill pitcher and an ice dispenser with up to 12.5 pounds capacity. Bring convenience to your kitchen with smart, innovative appliances from GE Profile. Right now, save up to $2,300 on select kitchen packages with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
This podcast is supported by Progressive, a leader in RV insurance. RVs are for sharing adventures with family, friends, and even your pets. So if you bring your cats and dogs along for the ride, you'll want Progressive RV insurance. They protect your cats and dogs like family by offering up to $1,000 in optional coverage for vet bills in case of an RV accident, making it a great companion for the responsible pet owner who loves to travel. See Progressive's other benefits and more when you quote RV insurance at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet injury is an additional coverage and subject to policy terms.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Weekend 23, Season 1, Episode 2, Wreckers, is over, but we're just getting started over here at Post Show Recaps. Welcome back, my friends. It is I, Rich Filiberto, DM Philly, out here on the internet. Very excited to be back with you again, talking about the second episode of this new season over on MGM Plus, Beacon 23. I, of course, am not alone. I am one man on a beacon, but I am joined by the one and only Corey D. Corey, very glad to have you here. How are you?
I'm doing great. Honestly, again, I was worried I scared you away because this time I know before the podcast, I suggested that we both use our creepy flesh-based interfacing to access the video recording and the audio recording for this podcast. I know it's a little unsettling, but it's just so much easier to just like sit there and think everything and make it work, you know? So I'm hoping that we can have an easy transition.
It's true. I didn't get these implants installed for nothing, Corey.
You got to use them.
Yeah, the PSR fam. Our secrets under the table as we're direct mainlining in on the YouTube of it all. Corey, episode 2, Wreckers. We got like the double premiere on Sunday night. What'd you think, just off the top?
It was a lot more action-packed and really progressed the plot much further than the first one. I think it was a very interesting roller coaster, sort of, you know, going up the hill for episode one and plummeting down pretty quickly for episode two, but very engaging. And there were some creepy elements. There were some kind of some cool strategic and sci-fi elements to the fighting. And ultimately we learned a lot over the course of the episode. So I think it was a pretty solid foray into episode number two. What do you think?
I- I echo a lot of that. I really like a lot of like the peripheral world building that we're doing just in terms of the dialogue and the characters. I think that metaphor of like the up and down really fits. It was like the clink, clink, clink of the roller coaster, like building up, building all this potential energy as we got into the beacon and we met Astor and Hallen in episode one, and the real like falling action this week, or this episode, I should say. It was really kinetic. I thought everything looked really good. Like when we're playing in sci-fi in this like budgetary space, I guess I'll say, it can be very hit and miss, right? And everything looked sharp, and I'm really appreciating that as we get a little further.
Yeah, I keep sort of expecting sort of a chink in the armor in terms of the way that this is all presented to us, and so far it's been really clean and really solid. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, fully agree. So I got a little bit of a long, short recap that I will break into here, and then we will talk through the episode in total.
Let's do it.
Okay, sounds good. So we open while Hallen and Astor watch on as the intruders make entry to the beacon. One of them, we'll learn, is named Kennedy, expresses some dissension, suggesting that they shouldn't have entered the beacon, but their leader dismisses her. Harmony is able to identify one of them, and Bart continues suggesting that they suffocate them all by opening the airlock, though Astor seems unwilling to kill Hallen. Bart is disabled by one of the newcomers hacking the system, and ultimately these invaders that will learn to be called the Wreckers find Hallen locked in the airlock. They quickly release him and realize he is not the beacon keeper. Hallen offers ultimately to get them access to the qubit storage in exchange for the remote picker that will let him leave the beacon and 2 minutes alone with Astor to settle his score with her, or so he claims. He manages to slip away, escaping into one of the safety panels of the beacon, while Harmony IDs the leader of the team as a former soldier who was dishonorably discharged. Hallen ultimately gets into the room with Astor, and the Wreckers watch on as the pair fight, but Hallen isn't truly trying to hurt her as the pair of them come to a tense agreement. Harmony, at this point, finally IDs Dr. Kennedy as a former minister of an outer colony that died because their beacon malfunctioned and ultimately prevented the planet from essential resupplies. Hallen hooks up to a charging station to empower his military implants, and Astor agrees ultimately to his plan where they'll open all the hatches with the intent to split the Wreckers up. Tensions, meanwhile, in the Wreckers between Battle and Kennedy rise as they move to start to explore the beacon, and Harmony does manage to separate them, closing all the hatches. Kennedy and Chick are together, and she's certain that there's something valuable here they need to find. The pair of them come across a picture of their collective family left lingering on a screen, and they debate whether or not they're ever going to have a life beyond this again. Chick seemingly wants to win Battle's respect by spilling red, but Kennedy says that killing somebody will gain him nothing. He accuses his mother of killing millions, and she slaps him, prompting Son to draw his weapon on her. Harmony ultimately gets in contact with Astor, or I'm sorry, Harmony gets Astor in contact with Kennedy, and Astor says that QTA will pay them to back off, but Kennedy counters that QTA hired them for this job. She finds the minerals that Astor was examining, and Hallen questions Astor about her ties to this organization, the QTA. Hallen, now fully charged, says that ultimately he will kill all these people if it means he's going to be able to get access to their ship and leave the beacon. Hallen attacks, killing the techie and fighting Big Face, knocking them into the zero grav transition. Astor knocks Battle into it as well and proceeds to cut off the Wreckers' access to the beacon. She goes back upstairs to confront Chick and Kennedy, telling them that she's from a colony that died like theirs is. The doctor, Kennedy, hears her out. Hallen managing at this point to kill Big Face just as Battle closes in with them and hits him with some type of concussive device. Astor says that they shouldn't take the rocks, but ultimately they need to go and defend their ship. So Kennedy sends Chick back to do so, telling her son to leave the minerals behind. Astor and Kennedy discuss the fall of Alau, and Astor gives the woman a pile of qubits, telling them to get far away from here. battle spots Kennedy heading back to the ship, and he moves to catch Aster. At this point, Hallen wakes up and he spots Chick chasing them. Kennedy gets there as Chick is holding Hallen at gunpoint and explains that Aster doesn't want to go with them, but has made a deal for Hallen to get a first class ticket off the beacon. He turns back saying that he's not going to leave her, and Kennedy's trying to keep Chick with her, but they end up arguing about what happens on the colony, and the son shoots his mother. Hallen at this point encounters the mineral. It appears to have another flashback that knocks him out. Battle is chasing Aster throughout the ship, but discovers that he is in fact chasing Harmony, who is projecting Aster's image as the real Aster leaps out from behind him and stabs him to death. Chick realizes everything that has transpired in these final moments, and he turns back to the ship, leaving the beacon on his own. Harmony is able to wake Bart back up, and Aster gives Hallen some medication as he will wake up, explaining that he didn't want to leave her. She thinks that it's just the drugs, but the man says he cannot be alone again. That was episode 2, Wreckers, Corey. Where do you want to start? A lot went down.
Yeah. And Wreckers at first, I mean, this episode really teaches us a lot about not just the world, but about the mechanics of the ship. I always thought that was incredibly interesting. I mentioned the biomimetic interface devices,
yes, right,
that
did.
They referred to. This very interesting, like, and biomimetics is I've looked it up because of the show, but it's like a real interdisciplinary field. It says principles from engineering, chemistry, and biology are applied to machines or systems so that they can have functions that mimic biological processes, which really does line up with the creepy tubes that connect into people's implants here. We also saw Aster sort of have that going on when she was taken out of the pod in the previous episode. So we have that. We have sort of the more of the makings of the beacon itself. And then we also have the Wreckers. And the Wreckers themselves are a concept in the book. In the book, actually, it's funny because the protagonist in the book talks about Wreckers from the perspective of, you know, we have this parallel of the beacon to the lighthouse. And Wreckers existed in lighthouse days as well for real ships, right? They would intentionally crash ships and shipwreck them so that they could loot the ships and take whatever was inside of them. So there were this malicious sort of type of group that would intentionally ground ships so that they could loot them, essentially. Mm-hmm. And this is the same idea. You even see at the very beginning of these guys coming in that that ultimately their initial thought was that they were supposed to loot the ship that crashed in episode 1.
Yep.
Which lets you make the sort of logical connection that they probably had something to do with the ship crashing in episode 1. So a lot of pieces put together there. I'm curious to know what you thought, because this was another little mini book aid for me here.
Yeah, I really dug it. I mean, I didn't track on the notion that they're more maybe assertive pirates, right? Because that's kind of what you're talking about, ultimately.
Right.
Like they're pirates guising themselves in this term of Wreckers. So I hadn't put that together, but it became clear very immediately that they have an agenda, that they shouldn't have been in here, that their commander was kind of like overreaching in that way. As to like the biotechnology and the kind of clarification that we're getting, not just of the beacon, but of the people, this is really compelling to me, right? We talked a lot last time about the AI, as we have these kind of like dueling AIs in Harmony and in Bart. And so I'm a big Star Wars fan, as are you, Corey, I know. And I always love this, like, are we more man or machine? Like, as we're discovering, Halen's filled with these implants. Aster has this kind of like bioport as well. We see this techie guy amongst the Wreckers hacking in and ultimately like gaining pretty full control and autonomy over the beacon. This is really fascinating to me, just again, in terms of the depth of world building that we're getting here and the kind of the ideas that we're exploring in this very alien culture. There's just so much to take apart. I thought it was great the way that as soon as this crew is on the ship, we have some clarity as to like the tension and the dynamics in between them. Like for a lot of these characters that were maybe, you know, just there as kind of red shirts to a degree with like Big Face and even like the tech guy, right? I feel like they filled their archetypes really clearly. Like, pretty quickly, I had a sense of, like, who this crew is and, like, where they all fit in their hierarchy to a degree, if that tracks.
Absolutely, it does. And by the way, poor IT guy who never got a name of the five of them. He was never named. He has no named credit from a character perspective. And he was the one that had an intestine plugged into his chest. So, like, I feel like he really got the short end of the stick here.
That was big port, man. Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah.
So much sci-fi. We're like, it's the chip. Especially so much of what we do now exists in this wireless space, right?
Yes.
And yeah. I think that you lose a little bit without that kind of physical connectivity. There's a little bit of the, like, retro tech going on here, right? Of, like, the projection of science fiction as it was occurring when this book was written decades in the past, and the idea that you would have to plug in. But I think there's something really, like, powerful visually into the imagery when you have that kind of, like, big umbilical cable, right? Like,
right.
Plugged back into the ship, which is acting like ultimately a womb to preserve all these people's lives in the void of space, you know?
Yeah, that's a great metaphor. And ultimately, he's operating all these things by just standing back and thinking about it. It just makes for such an interesting, like, imagery within the, like you said, the entire, like, whole of the beacon. And I do think, to your point, that it's not only just the choices in terms of the man versus machine of it all, and there's the nature of how all these things are happening in this stranded beacon in the middle of space, but also the fact that when these wreckers come in, we see them for less than an hour of showtime, and I am super immersed in all their stories before the end of it. Like, I go in and they're all rushing in, and I'm like, I'm trying to figure out who's who and what everybody's name is and everything that's going on. By the end of it, it's this, I mean, most of them are dead, but you know, I have this very deep sort of understanding of where they all come from and where they're all going. That's always, it's always fascinating to me to introduce five characters at once. And by the end, you're pretty immersed.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, especially obviously Kennedy and Chick are, like, kind of central to all of this battle, yes, is the other real foil to them. But this whole relationship of mother and son, and it ends like horrifically, so tragically.
Yeah.
I mean, you see Chick pull the gun so many times, right? He pulls the gun when she slaps him as they're kind of arguing about, she was the minister of this Outer Rim colony. Ilau, was that the name of it?
Ilau, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe so.
And so, you know, she was like, we get into it ultimately that, like, the father was advocating that they evacuate, but she was trying to, like, do the best for the people of the planet, the people of the colony, rather than make the decision that would preserve her family, which is immediately so tragic, right? Because I think that in the lens, certainly, that we're viewing it from in 2023, from the American political system being an absolute, like, clown fiesta disaster, to see somebody that's actually, like, espousing the virtue of the role of her job as a public servant to care for all these people, rather than a self-serving kind of maneuver of, like, well, me and my family could get out of here, right? So there's immediately this kind of sympathy, this empathy that I have for her. She becomes rootable in that way. And then the conflict with her son, who's had his family taken from him and has this, like, massive kind of probably survivor's guilt that we're exploring in some way, and animosity directed at his mother for the fact that, like, his father and his sister could be alive, right? That he pulls the gun on her and she's like, never do that again. Then he ends up with the gun on Battle and he's like, what are you doing, kid? Then he's got the gun on Hal and he's like, man, get that thing out of my face. It felt, like, very clear to me that this guy was gonna have to kill his mother by the end.
Yeah.
It
was definitely like a writing on the wall scenario for sure for him. And it's interesting because I didn't realize at first, I don't know, maybe this was just me, I don't know how quickly you realized it, but I didn't realize at first that they were related, you know?
No, I didn't either, right? Like, he drops his helmet, like you said, you were calling him Helmet, and Battle says, like, oh yeah, let mommy pick it up. And I thought that was a little bit more of, like, just teasing.
Like, patronizing,
exactly. Yeah. And I certainly didn't clock it the first time we see that image come up, that was Chick. But obviously, once we're back in the room, it becomes pretty clear, you know?
Yeah, when they see it together, I kind of was like, wait, was that him in the corner? And that was when I really started to put it together, and then everything else sort of clicked. But it really justifies Kennedy's action. She mentions later in the episode that, you know, she had no idea how many things that she would have to do just to survive. And she's acting like Chick's mother in basically the entire episode, right? She's working through all these problems. She's like, leave the kid alone. He's just a kid. Let's not do this. And she's showing this heart in this weird situation where she comes on as a pirate. At first, I kind of thought maybe she was like the financier of the group or something, right? Like the dynamic that she had with Battle. And it turns out she's just trying to protect herself and her son to the point where she's willing to make a deal later on in the episode. The way that that ended is just so tragic, but also sort of Chick leaves both worlds behind in essence. Like he's like, I fulfilled what I, he obviously looked at Battle as a father figure. Yep. And wanted so much to please him and to ingratiate himself with him. But once it all happened and he realized the cost that it took, there's this amazing scene where, you know, we talked in the last episode about how we have this weird dichotomous like gravity where the gravity flips in the middle, right?
And I keep considering it like the transition point, right?
Yes.
It's like, it's the zero grav transition. Yeah.
And then he was supposed to get Battle this ammo, and Battle runs out of ammo, right? And part of the reason why he dies. And he finally brings it back, throws it into this dead zone of gravity between the two sides, the transition point, as you call it, along with like a drop of blood in the gun. And they just both sit there. And it felt like a grave to me, right? Mm-hmm. It felt like Chick was honoring someone's memory in that moment by like dropping this ammo into this like deep pit where the gravity just all stops it at the middle. It was very interesting symbology and scenery there.
Yeah, it was a tremendous visual, right? Of like those things just kind of hanging suspended in the center of the space. It did feel really resonant. Is this Chick's Chekhov's gun? Like now that we have the gun and the ammo here, this is going to be relevant at some point, right?
Yeah, I would think so, except it's hard because I don't know. Hugh Howey's very much like a short story person.
And yeah, interesting.
I do think that it's just as likely that, you know, we'll never see Chick again.
Fair.
Although, to be fair, like to your point, that gun and the ammo are just sitting there in the middle of the craft field.
Yeah, right now. I mean, that's what struck me. That's the two questions I had. Like, okay, so this character is going to leave this environment, obviously, like fraught with all kinds of like emotional baggage that's going to come from what went down here. Like, will we see them again? Because that's a really interesting peripheral character to this story, right? Yeah. There was part of me that wondered, is he going to stay here now? Will he be a kind of third player in this ensemble moving forward, given the fact that everybody else is dead and now they have a ship and we have a little bit of maneuverability? What could be this about? So I don't know. I was struck by him leaving at the end and had that question. But then I also just had the question of like the loaded gun sitting there. It felt like very on point. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I could totally see that being a Chekhov's gun, literally, in the future for sure.
Let's talk about Aster and Halen a little bit. I know I'm back and forth. Halen, Hallen. It's the wheel of time, folks. It's not fault. Too many name pronunciations. But so like Hallen is really in this interesting spot where he negotiates its way out and he seems to be offering them qubits. This is currency. It's money.
That's what I took from it. Yeah.
Right. It seemed like clarified later. I thought it was food at first, but the whole revelation of like his implants and the way that he like negotiates with them. And then ultimately Kennedy's like, this guy's going to screw us over. Like he ran away. He escaped. We can't trust him. And Battle's like, I don't know, maybe. And they're all kind of watching with the fight. Hallen like kind of miming the battle, his actual like fight with Aster when he gets to her. It all felt like really interesting, but certainly where we come to by the conclusion of this notion, like, I was never going to leave you. I didn't want to leave you. I just don't want to be alone. Like, I don't know. I just found his whole kind of journey throughout this episode pretty interesting.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting about that is that I do think there's a parallel in between. It's interesting how the Wreckers and Halen and Aster kind of have similar dynamics between
them,
right? You have the battle wanting to inherently trust Halen because they're both ex-military and getting a little upset at Kennedy when she said, oh, he's ex-military, so he can't be trusted. He's like, what about me? I'm ex-military too, right? And then in the same face, you have Kennedy and Aster bonding together about their shared experience of being basically affected and isolated and alone based on, you know, being isolated from the rest of the world and being cut off from supplies and all this other stuff that they've both had this experience of that allowed them to bond. And so I feel like trust is a key theme. And at the end, having Halen basically admit to Aster, like, I'm sure he'd like to go, but he says, I don't want to be alone. I never wanted to leave. And it took so long to convince Aster of that. To your point, when he's mocking and sort of, he knows he's on camera, he, you know, tackles her behind the table and starts punching, but he's punching the ground. She's still trying to fight back the entire time.
Yeah, she is. Yeah.
And got her like gravity, brass knuckle sort of vibe going on. And like, you know, pretty fun scene. Absolutely. But it's like this interesting, you know, you saw Battle and Kennedy always at odds with each other. And I think the difference between them and between Halen and Aster is that they actually are able to sort of start to patch their differences.
This podcast is supported by Progressive, a leader in RV insurance. RVs are for sharing adventures with family, friends, and even your pets. So if you bring your cats and dogs along for the ride, you'll want Progressive RV insurance. They protect your cats and dogs like family by offering up to $1,000 in optional coverage for vet bills in case of an RV accident, making it a great companion for the responsible pet owner who loves to travel. See Progressive's other benefits and more when you quote RV insurance at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Pet injury is an additional coverage and subject to policy terms.
Visit Rivers Casino and Resort, the Capital Region's ultimate entertainment destination, with live table games, a winning dining experience, live entertainment, and so much more. Don't miss our $10,000 collect and go drawing on Friday, April 27th at 8 p.m. 10 guests will be drawn for the chance to win their share of $10,000 cash. Earn entries all month long by playing your favorite games or participating in our $50,000 collect and go sticker challenge on Thursdays and Fridays. Good times are always on the table at Rivers Casino and Resort. Must be 21 plus to gamble. Gambling problem? Call 1-877-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I saw a comparison to be made between the two groups also. I mean, if we call Aster and Halen a group,
right.
Just in the sense that they're from these disparate backgrounds, right? Like it seems like Battle's crew and this crew of Wreckers, it's all these disparate people that have kind of been collected and just kind of drawn up into this, right? In the way that ultimately like Kennedy and Chick are refugees, right? They're like refugees from this kind of like destroyed colony, as it were. This is the only kind of path they found their way out of. We hear Kennedy, that line that you're talking about, I didn't know what I would have to do to survive. Presumably they've had to do a lot of things before they even ended up like with these Wreckers. But the way that like you have somebody coming into this group and this really disparate perspective coming from the ex-military guy, and then this other person that's involved with the QTA. So I want to ask you about the QTA. Is this a thing from the book? Like, should I know what this acronym means, or is it this mysterious acronym that they keep like throwing around here and I'm a little confused about?
I was planning on asking you if you remember, did I miss something from episode one about the QTA? I think very clearly it's supposed to be a mystery who the QTA is. Obviously, there was some insight in the first episode that Aster is not really working with the ISA, right? Like, and the QTA seems to be this nefarious organization who was supposed to pick up Aster with the discovery of the minerals, but then they sent this other strike team in first. It's very interesting. They seem super shady. And I'm very curious to know who they are, but I don't think that we've had any clue-ins yet.
No, I didn't either. Yeah, it seemed to me like, you know, one of these things that we're doing. I mean, we talked about it last time. This is lean-in television, I feel like. This is the kind of show that you do really have to pay attention. It doesn't feel like second monitor content. It's not going to serve you well to be like scrolling your phone because there's so many little beats like this that are coming in, like the visual imagery of like, you know, Chick's face on the screen when it comes up the first time. There's a lot of little details, I think, that we can easily overlook if we're not paying attention. So I like the implication here of this like mysterious, nefarious organization that has like doubled down on redundancy of like, we're going to send this woman with her AI to go retrieve this thing. And that ship exploded, but then we're going to send a second ship. I mean, I guess presumably now that we're backtracking a little bit and I have some clarity, if presumably the wreckers were coming here to pick up the salvage of the exploded ship, is it the notion that like they got sent after the ship exploded, that the QTA is like, oh, we've lost our asset, go like clean it up and do us a favor, get whatever was left there? Or am I like deep thinking it too much?
I actually think I mentioned earlier, I think the wreckers caused the crash. And that's why they're called wreckers, right? They would just be salvaging or pillaging, but they're wrecking. They wrecked the boat and crashed it basically by hacking the beacon. And we know that they can because they had IT guy, even though, you know, he couldn't plug the creepy tube into the outside. So I'm not sure how he hacked it from outside the beacon. But, you know, he obviously had the capability of doing that. So I think like if we want to piece together the plot, I think that at the beginning, right, we had this ship coming through hyperspace. Mm-hmm. It had Aster on board. Mm-hmm. And then Aster was heading to Beacon 23. The the wreckers, presumably, this is my assumption, the wreckers hacked into the beacon or somehow sabotaged the beacon to stop it from that happening, right? So Aster's ship crashes. She's in a life pod, so perhaps she knew that it was going to happen because she was in a life pod, but probably not. I would think probably not on that. She gets on the beacon. She's looking for these minerals, very obviously. When the wreckers come, they also are looking for the minerals, but they suggested that the minerals, they thought the minerals would be found on board the wreckage of the ship that they crashed.
Right.
Which that's the interesting piece to me, because why would the minerals have been there on this ship passing through? Unless maybe what's his name, Solomon, the original beacon keeper, was getting them through some nefarious means that we don't know about, maybe through passing ships or something, or trading with ships passing by. I have no idea, but that's like the one thing, the one puzzle piece that doesn't fit. Even if the wreckers were sent after like Aster and potentially what she was out to find, she was always out to find it on the beacon. So why did they think that they'd find it on her ship to start with?
Yeah, it's really fascinating. I mean, there's some questions here that I think are probably intentional, and we'll get a little bit of clarity on going forward, obviously. But the machinations of the QTA seem really fascinating to me, right? I was kind of working on the supposition without having considered that they destroyed the ship. Like, okay, so for whatever reason, the QTA has reason to believe that like Aster discovering these minerals or something from Aster's past is such that they can no longer trust her. She's no longer like a reliable asset. And we have to like circle around and double down on the redundancy to like, let's just make sure we get our hands on the thing. But there's a lot of little details to it all that are very uncertain, to be sure.
Yeah. And I think we can maybe cross those wires or uncross the wires. Yeah, I guess that's the right term. We're not going to cross them more. Hopefully we get those wires uncrossed for us. And I am making an assumption about the wreckers crashing the ship, but that's sort of what makes sense to me from my context as a book reader. It's obviously super different than the book, but they made all those comparisons in the book to wreckers intentionally crashing ships in the olden days when we used real boats on the water. And I feel like it would make a lot of sense for them to do that here too.
Totally tracks. So the mineral, right? We see it again a little bit, but am I like making the leap here? It seems like Halen's encounter with the mineral immediately incites this flashback and knocks him out cold, such that Aster has to like drug him to wake him up at the end.
Yeah, I think that was a specific, more like a vision at this point than a hallucination, right? We talked about last podcast that it seems like maybe there's supposed to be a misdirect, like, oh, it's probably your PTSD, but in actuality, maybe it's something more. And I think it seems like it's being caused by the mineral, ultimately.
Yep. Yep, that's what I was tracking too. I'm so curious about this mineral. I love the vibe of it. I like the glowing blue rock thing here.
Yeah.
But the whole notion too that we get to, I mean, Astor negotiates with Kennedy. And we have this beat where Astor's like, I'm from the other colony that got name checked when we got the history of Halal. Like this other place 30 years in the past that fell. Did you take it down? I didn't write the name.
So Kennedy was from Halal. The news report said it mirrors what happened to the colony of Benelaus 30 years ago. And then when Astor is talking about it, she did talk about a different, a third place.
Oh, she even name checks a third place. So my question for you really though, regardless of the specificity of the places.
Maybe it's Menelaus. Sorry. Maybe it is the same. And I just heard it different. Maybe Menelaus. It could be the same thing.
It was tough for me to get it. I didn't have my subtitles up, so I didn't jot it down, but I think it's less important. I think what's relevant is that we've seen Astor play this game before, right?
Yes.
When she's sitting there like bonding with Hal in last episode and she's like, oh, I had this experience just like you. I was locked in isolation. I was in quarantine. And you, I think very savvily identified there's some truth in there. It felt like there was a lot of truth in terms of the emotion of what she was conveying, even if the story itself wasn't true. And there's some mirrored truth, I think, in terms of what she's talking about is isolation in the same way, which I think is another really powerful theme alongside trust, obviously, that we're exploring in this show. But do we believe this story, Corey? Like, do we think she comes from a broken colony, or is this all like just bullshit and smoke and mirrors that she's using to engender herself to this person in the moment because it's going to work?
I had the same thought. Like, she already crafted this elaborate lie to Halen in episode one. And actually, I'm thinking maybe it is important if they're the same or not, because ultimately, and I'm not to be too pedantic.
Oh, no, no, please. Let's be pedantic.
I'm Captain Pedant here.
Yeah, that's why we're here.
Ultimately, exactly. Ultimately, so it's I wrote down the name of the original colony, which was, I said Benelaus, and I think she does say Menelaus, and I don't know why I wouldn't think that. I just heard one of them wrong. So I'm pretty sure they're the same, and I think that is important, because when she was listening to that video report, when she finds Kennedy's information, she hears that.
Yes.
She hears this is the same thing that happened 30 years ago with the colony of Menelaus, right? And boom, there's your cover story right there. And she could leverage that very easily. And I think that it would be kind of compelling for her to be lying again, because maybe over the course of these fabrications, we do, as you mentioned, learn the actual true thread behind her stories. Maybe she wasn't actually trapped on this colony, but obviously she has real emotion behind, again, this feeling, just like the first episode, of her being alone and stranded and isolated. And what she ends up bonding with Halen about as well. But I think that would almost, I'd almost rather her be lying at this point, because they really did kind of set that trap for us to be falling into.
It felt very explicit to me, right? Without me exactly clocking the names, that was immediately my assumption and inference of like, oh, she just heard that other name. She's going to repeat it right now. This is her go-to. This is, the kind of technique that gets used in fortune telling a lot and all this kind of stuff of the very subtle information gathering and the kind of regurgitation of that information in ways that seem really plausible and engender trust and all this kind of stuff. So it felt really on point. And I love this as an idea. Like, if Astor tells a story every episode that we have to begin to extract the kernels of truth from, it's like our own little game of Clue that we get to play as we're kind of watching along this logic deduction. I think it's really compelling. And even just what we know kind of factually, I'll say in a very loose sense, about Astor, or objectively, that she is in deep space and she works in deep space. And we have a bit of an understanding that there's cryo sleep, time is passing, right?
Yeah.
They're traveling these incredible distances, as we talked about last time, in terms of the scale of it all. And so fundamentally, if she did have people, if that sister that she kind of name checked last time or referenced last time was real, then these people would be lost to her distant past by the very nature of her existence out here. So what kind of isolation does that breed for inside of a person? All of that feels really compelling. I mean, no surprise, Lena Headey is a really good actress. She's I'm very, very smitten by this character. I really like Astor. I like Helen a lot too, and the dynamic between them, but she's just such an enigma. It's really fun to wonder what's going on there.
I agree. And I think it's an amazing acting performance. I'm going to go off the deep end for a second here.
Please.
And there's a little thing that I wasn't sure that I heard right. So, because I love the character of Aster, but there's one thing that she said, and I just wasn't sure. So they're getting up from their quarrel in these living quarters when the Wreckers are watching them in the camera. They take out the camera. They're arguing a little bit. She said, "Oh, I don't need saving." And he says, "Oh, you being alive is just a result of me saving my own ass." And then she says, "What I think she said is, sorry about your nuts." But but she didn't hit him there. So I just want to know what she said.
Oh, I think she definitely did. I thought she kneed him there when he's like down on top miming the punches.
Yeah, maybe
a knee up and she's like, sorry about your nuts. Do you want a derma? You want some drugs? And he's like, that'd be great. She's like, too bad we're out because they just got robbed, right?
Yeah. Okay. I forgot about the knee. Okay. That. Because I rewound it like 7 times. I'm like, is that what she's saying?
I love it. I rewound it once as well to be like, wait, what just happened there? Because I was a little bit curious about the context. Like, I stopped paying attention for half a second, right? But I do think it's just like a fun punch of levity. And I think it speaks to the chemistry these two have.
Yeah,
they have a really great like repartee, you know, the back and forth, the pacing of their kind of dialogue, the cadence of their like exchanges. It feels really authentic. It's got this kind of brother, sister, like, you know, hair pulling, like rib knuckling kind of energy, right?
It's like coded in this like aggressive, heavily sarcastic, snippy. Like it's great. It's great. And the only concern I have with them having such an emotional bonding moment at the end of the episode is I hope that they can still be at odds with each other sometimes, because that's super fun. I'm sure they will.
This is a thing Grace Leader and I talk about a lot, where we're watching these shows and early on in a season, things are looking good. It looks like, all this conflict has been healed. Like, that generally feels like, things are going to be bad. Things are going to fall apart. Like, there will be something that comes up here. I really love the kind of closing point, the two of them just sitting on the stairs with the sort of fallout of everything that has transpired all over this place. They got corpses they got to clean up. Aster still's like covered in blood. Hound seems so really guilty about, I'm sorry I wasn't there for you. I'm sorry you had to do this on your own. This notion of he as a soldier, it like kind of again mirrored what we got from the Wreckers, right? Where they're going to send Chick ahead and he knows why he has to go ahead, because he can't do the other thing. This idea that like she had to kill the guy because he didn't, and he felt like that's his responsibility because that's the job he's taken on or whatever. Some of that stuff resonated with me.
Yeah, absolutely. And the emotionality of their connection, and ultimately like you said, he kind of like feels like he has this role even when he's charging himself. And I want to talk about that box, because that was a little confusing for me. But
when
he was charging himself and he said that like he said like, oh, I didn't kill Solomon, which, by the way, again, another clue to that mystery. I didn't kill Solomon, but that doesn't mean I'm a good guy, right? And that was a very powerful line as well. And I think that he's, you know, she definitely does not need, and she says so much, like his protection. But I do feel like he's trying to find a role with her that would allow him to be able to stay ultimately. Right? It's not even about protecting her as much as it is finding purpose, I think, for him.
I think that that's really compelling. Yeah, that's like the role that he's had. That's how he identifies himself, right? That's part of like his sense of self, is just taking that role on for in general as this soldier. I mean, part of what he talked about with the implants is, you know, they put more and more of them in the longer you're there. And I was there a long time, maybe too long, right?
Right.
So to the box of it all, because that was really compelling that he has to like charge up his implants. He's the weapon.
Right. Yeah. So I found this interesting because he, as you mentioned, he says, I found a weapon. It turns out it's actually his body. And he's just using this box to charge himself using the creepy biomimetic implant tubes. And he ultimately puts his thumbprint on the box to open it. And it's coded to another sergeant's name. It's Kai Nielsen, not him. So that this just like in my like in my in the back of my mind, alarms were going off. Like, why is this here? What is this? It looked like maybe some sort of military combat suit. She Aster says, "Oh, you brought a change of clothes and a massive battery." And so I'm like, okay, so it's an outfit and a battery. And then obviously we learned that the battery is used to charge up his implants. So obviously he can, you know, wreck house with all these wreckers. But why is it there? You know, he came on to the beacon as some sort of stowaway, right? Like he commandeered his way onto the beacon, even if he didn't kill Solomon. And yet there's this chest that doesn't have his name on it, but works with his thumbprint and is very clearly military equipment of some kind. So to me, it's a really small beat, but it makes me ask a lot of questions about how he got there. And like, what is this chest doing there? It's also just kind of weird that a chest with clothes in it ended up being just all it did was charge him. But I think that's why I'm curious about it.
Yeah, I was wondering, right? I mean, we got clarification that he's a pilot, right? We've heard that a bunch of times. He's a pilot. So a pilot's really different than like an infantry soldier, you know?
Right.
And part of me presumed like, okay, that's going to be a flight suit. That's why he didn't put it on. Like initially, as we get to the box with the change of clothes and the battery, I'm like, oh, okay, this is some kind of combat suit, some kind of exoskeleton. We're going to like beef up, you know? And,
right.
And that he doesn't put it on, that he just has to charge himself, left its own questions for me. I didn't catch the name on the screen, and I love that you did, because now the mystery deepens, right? This notion of, I didn't kill Solomon, but I'm not a good guy. Like, what did he have to do to go AWOL? And going AWOL is sometimes not as easy as literally just going over the wall, you know? like who did he kill this guy?
Yeah.
I like the implication, which has not been like spelled out so much. They've done it with show, don't tell. This guy's really good with technology. I mean, he's managed to like master the intricacies of the beacon in his time here. Obviously, in whatever way he did, he's able to gain access to this box, even though it's not necessarily assigned to him. Or is it? Is Halen like a whole nother deep identity? So I have some real questions there. That'll be very interesting to track going forward, because I didn't catch the name difference on the screen itself. That's a good pull.
And I was going for a lot of these little details. I have some others too, right? Like when Battle gets ID'd, he gets, his name is Timur Andi, but there the paragraphs of description under him are actual like paragraphs detailing Battle's life, right?
Yes.
Why he got discharged, and he doesn't have leadership qualities, but he can coerce people, and he can like initially seem like someone people can rally up against. He had repeated insubordination. He had arms trafficking and coercion that was recorded on his body cam. I mean, it went into detail, and I loved that. And I wonder, like, even for Battle, even though Battle is dead, like, I feel like there might be some additional like layering it on that, like, what is going on with Halen? Why was Halen dishonorably, or was he dishonorably discharged?
Right.
How was he? You know, why is he ex-military, and why did he end up running here to this beacon? I think that sort of just adds to the pressure. Just even seeing Battle's background, like, makes you wonder what happened with Halen just as much.
It does. Yeah. The whole mirroring of ex-soldiers, like, I want to know more about the military, you know.
Yes.
It makes me really curious about what the military organizations there are. The whole like QTA, ISA, the dynamics there. I can't wait to be able to get a little bit more of that. I wondered if the kind of fallout of having these three people's bodies here would result in kind of further information as we go forward. Is that going to be a source of information for these guys when we get in episode 3? Part of what I like about this is the seeming expectation that, like, I imagine we're going to pick up like right on the heels of where we were, right? This is a very kind of fast-paced show, it feels like, where we still have this ticking clock, Corey, of like, the ISA is coming. It's a major like plot point for the Wreckers, where they're like, you better get out of here before the ISA gets here, right? That's putting some pressure. So presumably that's still all going to fall out, and like, what information can be gathered from these bodies before they show up was like a lingering question I had in my mind as we came out of the end.
But I wonder, I thought maybe I heard that because Aster's actually working for the what is it, QTA, QS, Q, QTA? Yeah, QTA. Is the ISA even coming, or is the QTA coming?
Oh, good point. You're right. Because it's Halen who says, like, the ISA is going to be here. I'm the one who can get you into the locks. But Astra is talking to Kennedy, which is so hard to not say Kennedy. I appreciate the slight letter change, but I'm like, okay, Kennedy. Astra talking to Kennedy about how, like, the QTA is going to be here. That's a really good point that, like, I clocked, but, like, didn't intellectually put together. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And by the way, for Kennedy, it's also two D's instead of two N's, which also throws me off.
Yeah, yeah.
They're really just going for, like, the weird spelling.
Yeah, you know? It's real Rob.
Like, when someone wants to name their kid. Yeah, it's like, I know it's her last name, but it's like when someone wants to name their kid a name, but they don't want to spell it the same way, right?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I have a friend who did that. It's a real tricky situation.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
What else? Did you
get? Yeah. Oh, I was gonna say the QTA is just gonna be, I think, one of the bigger sort of elements here. I was gonna say that, I mean, through the midst of all this, we have all this exposition that what happens when a beacon turns off and how that can affect everything. And lest I remind us, the beacon is still not working.
Yes.
After all of this. And granted, I'm sure that it would take, you know, dozens of years before you would strand an entire colony, but I feel like maybe let's get back on task here. You know, as a from Halen's perspective, like, he was so interested in fixing this thing, he's got to eventually figure out what's going on with his beacon.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, they have such different motivations, where Astra is so kind of focused on this mineral and dealing with the QTA. But how does that get corrupted or kind of polluted, given this clarity of information that the QTA sent these wreckers after them? That is going to, like, perhaps really shift her perspective. And then Halen was so desperate to fix the beacon. And internally, part of my headcanon is like, well, if this isn't the right guy, part of why he's desperate to fix the beacon is so nobody's going to come out here like, hey, the beacon's broken, and figure out that he's the wrong man in the seat, right? And so what kind of pressure is that creating for him? Is that still a concern for him going forward, right? I'm really curious. And I'm curious about, again, the potential kind of ticking clock of, like, how long can the beacon be malfunctioning before some authorities are going to send somebody here to, like, reconcile that? We could have an even more complicated situation on our hands.
And that would be the ISA, right?
So we
also could have some potential future scenario where the ISA and the QTA are both trying to get to the beacon at the same time, which would be interesting.
Really interesting. I think that it sets us up for a really dynamic place moving forward. I'm excited to scope episode 3, but were there any other tiny details that you clocked that you want to dig into a bit?
Yeah, one in particular, and this relates to the book. If you remember last episode, I mentioned that the whole them talking through comms while one ship is traveling in hyperspace was really weird, especially because in the book, it's a NASA sort of style text message sent over, you know, short codes, basically, is all that they were able to communicate to each other. They did have that in this episode, actually. So they're actually falling more in line with the systems that I thought they had than I realized. It's just that first scene of that communication is, I think, what threw me off. Mm-hmm. Because they have what's called a quantum tunneler. In fact, when Kennedy sees it, she says something like, oh, that was a very quick way to find out that no one cared. It's this way, I think, of sending these long distance messages. And you actually see it later in the episode when Aster sort of, turns out to be Harmony, but, like, you think Aster's locked in the room and Battle's trying to get into her. You can see the screen of the quantum tunneler and it says, restricted usage, maximum of 25 characters, authorized personnel only, absolutely no personal messages of any kind. And so it's weird because, like, I think I just got so thrown off by that first scene to say, like, this is totally different than the book. And it is different, right? It's far newer and shinier and more holographic and 3D and all that, you know, modern sci-fi, but they do seem to still try to be putting in these elements from the way that things worked in the book into the show. So I kind of liked seeing that.
That's really cool. Yeah. I mean, part of what I had clocked, I guess, with that first ship is they were in close proximity, right? Like they were kind of closing in on the beacon at the point that they opened the radio comms. So it doesn't necessarily invalidate what you're talking about. 25 characters. Oh my God. Even when Twitter was good, it was only 140. That would be like some real tough message. Right?
You can't even put in a hashtag.
I know. Like, oh my God. Well, we're about to get rid of those anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding.
Anything else that you clocked along the way?
No, I'm just really excited to see where this goes. I think that this there's so many different directions that this could go in. I do sort of hope that they start to really dig into the beacon itself, and they maybe, like you mentioned, some of the military backstory or Aster's mm-hmm. backstory, at least maybe peel off one of those band-aids for us pretty soon. But ultimately, I'm that is not at all a complaint, because I didn't expect this to happen in this way in this episode, and it was an amazing ride. And yeah. I think they can build us up as much as they need with those plot points, and I trust where they're going with it at this point.
Cool. Yeah, I really dug it. I thought it was a great cadence. The fights look good. Everything looked good. You know, if there's like an nitpick, I guess it's like it felt a little like convenient or whatever for sure. There to like have these wreckers show up immediately. But all of that being interconnected, like you helped my critique of that a lot already by the implementation of the idea that the wreckers crashed the first ship. Nonetheless, I'm excited to dig into episode 3, and we will do just that. After it airs, Corey. But until then, what do you got going on? Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on various social media websites at Cavx, CAVX. I'm not doing any other pods right now, but maybe one day I'll jump back on Twitch or do something else fun like that. But until then, one of the main places you can actually find me is on the Post Show Recaps Patreon Discord. So, you know, you can absolutely sign up at can you drop the URL for me?
It's patreon.com/postshowrecaps. At the $10 a month level, you would get access to our veritable beacon of channels. We got a lot of stuff going on in there. We're talking about a lot of stuff all the time. We're playing games. There's brand deals happening. There's a ton of D&D. It's a really great place to hang out. The $5 a month level gets you access to our campus. You can come hang out, chat with both of us, hit us up there anytime. We always appreciate it, to be sure.
Yes. Yeah, you had that down. I'm glad that I asked you to say that.
No problem. It's Pavlovian. It's like you pull my string.
That's right.
It's, yeah, you know.
That's right. But absolutely co-signed. It's an amazing place to be and a great place to talk about shows like this with like-minded people who are watching them and are interested in them. So come stop by if you want to, and you can find me there as well.
Yep, come hang out. You'll find us both there. I'm at DM Philly in all the places. I'm still on Twitter while that ship is sinking. I'm over on Twitch at DM Philly, on YouTube. I'm talking about a bunch of TV. Grace and I breaking down episodes of Yellowstone every week as it's airing over on CBS. We're talking through Tales from the Loop, awesome series on Amazon Prime with Ariel. I'm breaking down some Dungeons & Dragons with the great Dr. Melissa Woodward. And my friend Prez and I just wrapped up our coverage of Season 1 of The Winter King, also airing on MGM. Plus, pretty strong season 1. It was a really fun show. If you dig Arthurian legend, it's a pretty gritty historical retelling of the Arthurian myth. Pretty fun show. We'll be back in 1 week's time talking about episode 3. But until then, just remember, don't eject the strangers in the airlock. They may save your life in the end.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.